Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokett. Thanks for tuning into our award-winning public affairs program, For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. This morning, we're going to open up meeting the physician behind Docs Medical Group and Sleep Center based in Orange. We're going to learn how the idea behind the level and scope of walk-in medicine and care delivery has changed in recent years, and how these centers are broadening the types of services offered to patients and some of the specialties offered at Docs that you might not expect, all to help maintain and improve your health for life. Then we'll talk about protecting yourself and those you love when they're out on the road. We'll check in with a representative of Connecticut-based nonprofit Survive the Drive. We'll find out how this organization can provide local schools and community groups with no-cost workshops on defensive driving and an opportunity to get behind the wheel and actually learn some hands-on defensive driving techniques from the experts. Then we're going to close touching base with CERC, the Connecticut Economic Resource Center. The center's latest quarterly Informed CT survey is public right now, so we'll chat with an informed CERC researcher and drill into some of the implications of what folks across the state are thinking in relation to the overall economy, how it's affecting their household, jobs, and the bottom line. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokett, right after this reminder. There's always something wild going on at Connecticut's only zoo, and the next session of the popular Beardsley Zoo Zoo Tots Education Series is coming up on June 11th and 12th with sessions at 10:30 a.m. This monthly 45-minute program for children 22 months to 4 years accompanied by an adult may include stories, games, crafts, and a live animal presentation. This June session is entitled Some Like It Hot, where visitors learn about how animals handle a variety of temperatures. The cost for Zoo Tots is $10 for zoo members and one child, and $15 for non-members with a child. Participants can sign up for either day, and to reserve a space in the program, you need to pre-register by calling the zoo's education department at 203-394-6563 or register by email at programming@beardsleyzoo.org. And for more about everything there is to know and learn at the Beardsley Zoo, visit beardsleyzoo.org.
Well, we've got a brand new friend on the award-winning For the People, and it is a medical expert. We are always so excited to be able to make these acquaintances and bring these folks into the For the People fold, because the information that they offer is of value to anyone who's listening, whether you're listening on the air on Sunday morning or checking us out on one of the podcasts, on one of the radio station websites, or on iTunes. We're so excited to have Dr. Sedana with us. He is with Docs Medical Group. So I guess the first question I need to ask you, Dr. Sedana, is to tell us a little bit about yourself and explain what Docs Medical Group is all about.
Hi, great to be on the show. So I'm J.D. Sedana. I'm a pulmonologist, critical care specialist, allergist, and a sleep medicine doctor by training. And I own and operate urgent care centers in the state of Connecticut, which go by the name of Docs Urgent Care. We currently have 16 locations. We also practice primary care, sleep medicine, as well as allergy medicine in these clinics. Docs Medical Group, the parent corporation of Docs Medical Group, was the Urgent Care Center, originally formed in 2009. And Docs Medical Group is a recent nomenclature name change, which was done in 2015. And we are in multiple cities across Connecticut, and we currently see hundreds and thousands of patients on a daily, weekly basis.
So under what circumstances are people seeing you for urgent care versus seeking out some type of advice and care that's more of a specialty nature?
So over the course of the last 10 years, people have trended to go more towards urgent care for the sake of convenience, because urgent cares will offer online appointments, for the sake of saving time, because they do not need to be waiting for longer periods of time, and for the sake of efficiency, because urgent cares can offer increased level of services, such as on-site blood testing, on-site lab testing, which a lot of medical offices may not be able to perform. What has happened is, as there is a greater influx of millennials and Generation Y, people are choosing to go to urgent care for all the above reasons that I just said, but also sometimes some of our patients just like the service that we offer, like the fact that they can find us in different locations. They could be at work, they could be at home, and there is a docs location which is close to them with all the records being integrated. They can go to one location and the next one for a separate visit. And because all the documents and electronic records are shared, they do not need to carry their information from one place to the other.
And obviously, if they live in an area where one docs is, but, you know, work or live in separate areas, they can go to the one that's closest to them, and the information is going to be uniform across the entire system.
Absolutely. That's the whole idea of having a single electronic record database. The other thing also is when you are at home, oftentimes, things that you want to be seeing a doctor for could be related to routine health maintenance. And what we see is when people are closer to their workplace, it more than likely is because they are sick. And being able to offer both kinds of treatments and intervention just to make people healthier is what we strive to do. And that's one of the reasons why we've added the primary care arm over the course of the last 2 years and offering primary care in all our locations, so that we are in the business of keeping and making people healthier, not necessarily looking to have people fall sick and come to us only for their sick visits. We want people to be healthier overall.
So what I'm hearing is you're really striving to sort of be the new family doctor of the 21st century.
Well, in a way, you could say that. We've never thought of it that way, but the family doctor of the 21st century is going to be someone who's going to have to provide greater degree of access, is going to be someone who is going to be able to be accessible, not just via phone or not just in person, but, you know, we're looking at telehealth and telemedicine where people can actually make appointments and have visits with our doctors through their cell phone, wherever they are. They do not need, they don't even need to be in the state of Connecticut, and they could be seen by one of our providers. So that's where healthcare is trending towards. It's a very, very dynamic field with a lot of changes occurring, as we all hear about. But we want to be at the forefront of all those changes.
Well, having been someone who had a loved one take ill at the airport, get on the plane, go to another state far, far away, and come off the plane and have to almost immediately go into a hospital. It's a very scary situation, and it must be incredible for patients who may be traveling for pleasure or business to arrive in Denver, Los Angeles, Seattle, Dallas, and they don't feel well, and they can be talking to the same doctor that they would go to right down the street.
Absolutely. They can be talking to the same doctor. That doctor will have access to all their medical records. So if somebody had an antibiotic, which they took 2 or 3 weeks before they left, we can better, you know, we can be sure that they're not being prescribed the exact same medication, which did not work the first time. Also, the prescription can be sent to a pharmacy where they are geographically located so that it works better for their interest, and they can, you know, simply pick that up. They don't need to go find a location close to where they might be in another city. And hopefully they're, you know, get treated faster and better.
And if the situation's serious, there's that instantaneous ability to share the medical history.
Absolutely. So we share electronic health records with a lot of other databases, so we can electronically transfer medical records for any of our patients to most databases across the country.
Fantastic. Well, also the other thing that people don't always think of an urgent care or an immediate care environment for is to be the portal through which folks can access specialties if they need it. So they come in to see you and there is something beyond your realm of expertise, or you're afraid that there might be a need for someone to see a specialist. You're completely in the loop with a number of other professionals and institutions and facilities to provide that care.
Absolutely. every single urgent care has a list of specialists from various specialties whom we refer to on a regular basis as necessary. You know, what's important to also understand is the dynamic which has changed in terms of healthcare, with people accessing the urgent care for most of their healthcare needs. And oftentimes, if it's someone younger who has a medical condition which needs a specialist to be involved, they might seek that specialist to get that specific care, but they will still continue to be going to the urgent care for most of their other visits. We see that a majority of our patients are between the ages of 18 to 50 years old, and there is data out there which suggests that in this particular age group, more than half their visits are episodic in an urgent care-like setting.
Very good. Folks, if you're listening, we're here visiting with Dr. J.D. Sedano at one of the offices of Docs Medical Group. We're so thrilled that he's involved with the Love CT initiative with us at Connoisseur Media, which you hear me talk about every week on the program. And we're getting some really important information from Dr. Sedano right now. We're going to drill into a couple of specific points of concern, the first being what we're identifying as intercity asthma and allergies. Doctor, can you speak and expand a little bit more on that?
So when we're looking at specific towns, in general, most towns, but there are certain specific towns where we see that there is a higher incidence of asthma. So there are medical studies which have shown that kids who grow up in inner city environments, and there are some cities in our areas such as Bridgeport, New Haven, East Haven, West Haven, where the exposure to sunlight, the exposure to cleaner air, the exposure to an area where kids can play is somewhat limited. Moreover, when these kids are in their homes, there could be oftentimes an increased exposure to mold or to dust mites which are living in carpets. And all of these things contribute to these kids having a higher incidence of allergies and subsequently a higher incidence of asthma. Kids having asthma related to inner city allergies have been shown in studies to have a higher incidence of hospitalization and long-term impact on health related to asthma.
What are some of the treatment options that you can offer to these families to hopefully help mitigate future exacerbated health problems as they grow older?
The interesting thing with allergies is one of the best treatments to do is to avoid the allergen which is causing the allergy. Unfortunately, in a lot of these instances, that may not be possible. If somebody is allergic to certain trees which are in their backyard or certain kinds of grasses, you know, we cannot wrap ourselves in a bubble and walk in one. Similarly, when we talk about kids with inner city asthma, this could be related to carpeting, and sometimes, unfortunately, the families may just not have enough money to afford changing these things. So what we do at our clinics is we offer skin testing for environmental allergens, which will detect allergens which can cause inner city asthma that we were just talking about, which will also detect allergens related to trees and grasses and pollen, and you know, we even test for certain food items. The idea behind this is to actually identify kids who are at a higher risk of having medical conditions related to allergies and treating them with pills, treating them with medications, but most importantly, treating them with allergy immunotherapy, which are allergy shots, which are given to these kids to train their body not to have a heightened degree of response to these allergies. This heightened response that our body has is what triggers an asthmatic episode.
Very good. I know another thing that we talked about before we went on the air this morning, Doctor, is your growing concern as vaping becomes so prolific, not just in the adult population, but is starting to move into the high school and even middle school category of your patients.
So looking at the history of medicine and cigarette smoking, in the 50s and 60s, people often felt that, you know, cigarette smoking is really harmless, and it was very socially and culturally acceptable, till we got to a point in the last 5 to 10 years where we've clearly identified that cigarette smoking can be damaging and cigarette smoking can cause various things, including pneumonias and lung cancers. We are in some ways seeing the exact same trend repeat itself with vaping. People seem to think that vaping is completely harmless, which in fact it is not. There are studies which have shown that vaping can cause the same exact incidence of irritation in the lungs. Vaping can increase instances of people having infections. However, the growth of vaping is somewhat concerning within the medical community in terms of the ease of availability and the ease of acceptance. And like what you just said, that younger and younger kids are now taking up vaping. So we are essentially exposing lungs, which may not be fully developed, to the toxic irritants which come with vaping.
And I have to imagine that some of your concern also has to be with younger people that don't have a handle on the quantity. They're consuming massive doses of nicotine delivered through the vaping in a very short period of time. That has to have cardiovascular implications, doesn't it?
Absolutely, 100%. You know, we have to factor in the fact that when we are vaping or we are smoking, the nicotine is going to have the same deleterious effects. The only perceived quote-unquote advantage of vaping is that cigarette smoke has a lot of other toxins in it, which vaping may not necessarily expose us to, which may be true to a certain degree, but there are other chemicals in what we vape which can also be toxic and damaging. We still don't know the full spectrum of how this will have long-term impact. You know, as you can imagine, things like cancer do not occur overnight. These can be things which can take years to develop. And we might not necessarily have even been exposed to the long-term effects of vaping because it is, after all, a relatively new phenomenon.
Very good. I would be remiss if I didn't spend the last couple of minutes that we have together just briefly talking about your expertise in regards to sleep, because even today, when I'm thinking about sleep medicine and sleep studies, I'm thinking about having to go to some huge medical center and be really involved and perhaps spend an overnight there. But now I'm hearing that your offices can be the portal through which people begin to explore problems that they're having with sleep.
Sleep is one of the most underdiagnosed medical conditions that we see in our profession. Unfortunately, a lot of times doctors may not necessarily recognize that. If you think about sleep and sleep apnea itself, sleep apnea simply means stopping breathing when we are sleeping at night. 90% of us do that. We, in fact, consider it normal if somebody does that for less than 5 times of every hour spent sleeping. So if someone sleeps for 6 hours, we expect them to stop breathing up to 30 times an hour, and we consider that normal. We give people a pass for that. However, because this is a condition which develops over many, many years, our body somewhat gets used to it. We learn how to not stay tired, how to not stay sleepy. In fact, what we are truly learning is how to continue to be in denial. What happens with sleep apnea is that people will have a drop in oxygen level, will not sleep well, will not rest well, and our body will release substances which essentially wake up the body. They're like the internal caffeine of the body. Mm. And these substances, called catecholamines, will have a downward and a harmful effect on our heart. They will increase the heart rate. There is an increased incidence of people having congestive heart failure, irregular heart rhythms. Mm. We do home sleep testing in all our facilities so that people who are unsure whether or not they may or may not have this medical condition do not need to have an extensive sleep study done overnight in a facility which they're not familiar with. The home test, although not necessarily the best test out there, still gives us an entry-level piece of information to see whether or not someone could have sleep apnea, or whether or not someone is losing oxygen at night when they're sleeping, because people who lose oxygen at night when they're sleeping are at a higher risk of having a heart attack or a higher risk of having a stroke and are at a higher risk of having sudden death. This is a nationwide epidemic. This is of significant concern. And unfortunately, like I said earlier, we are just not recognizing this enough.
Very good. Great information in a very quick visit with Dr. J.D. Sedana with Docs Medical Group. Doctor, the last thing we need to know is how people learn more about you. Website, social networks, I imagine they can click and find you.
Absolutely. You can find everything on Google, including me. So the best way to find us is at docsmedicalgroup.com. That has information on all our service lines, including the pulmonary, allergy, sleep medicine, as well as urgent care. It also allows you to make online appointments to all our urgent care clinics and locations. And in fact, it also has a widget which allows you to send us a text message so we can chat even before you come in.
Thank you very much.
So as we talked about on the introduction, we're going to move the subject matter to safety on the roads, doing everything you can to not only keep yourself safe behind the wheel as you traverse the state and your local neighborhoods or wherever you may travel by motor vehicle, but also ways to help keep your loved ones safe, especially those young drivers who don't have the on-the-road experience or necessarily the maturity and could use a little bit of extra help, including the opportunity to get some hands-on expert assistance in their very own car. We have featured Survive the Drive on the award-winning For the People many, many times over the past 20 years, and we have yet to meet Larry DeLude, and we're so glad we could welcome him to the program this morning. He is a charter board member on the board of directors for Survive the Drive, and is going to talk to us a little bit this morning about some of the exciting programs and opportunities that are coming up where you or someone you love might be able to benefit and perhaps even learn some life-saving skills from Survive the Drive. Larry, thanks for joining us.
John, thanks for having me. Happy to talk about Survive the Drive.
So tell us, all the way back at the beginning when this idea crossed your desk about forming a nonprofit that was going to try to help educate and protect people on the roads behind the wheel, give us some historical perspective of this organization and how far you've come in the years since the idea came to fruition.
Well, most of us who got involved in this from the beginning in Survive the Drive, John, we are people who like driving. We enjoy cars, and at the same time, we understand the problems that come up and that the potential for crashes. And we started to see that, especially among young drivers, there were big issues there. And we thought maybe we can do something about that. So we got together with Bob Green, who started Survive the Drive, and developed a program so that we could have a nonprofit to, first of all, go into high schools and make presentations to new drivers. And we've kind of expanded that into various other groups where we have dealt with first responders and police and fire drivers. And we're now taking it to the community itself, going into libraries around the state of Connecticut.
Right.
And, of course, we have our driver training clinics in person.
So explain a little bit to the folks that are listening how Survive the Drive is not a substitute for driving school or driving education, but a kind of a critical complement which may, in fact, provide reinforcement of or even complete inclusion of some missing pieces that may not be taught in the more fast track driver education programs, especially when young people are in a big hurry to get their license. A lot of times driving education really compacts a lot of information into a short amount of time.
Here's the way I look at it, John. 37,000 people died in car crashes last year. That's more than 100 people per day. And yet, there's very little done to improve driver skills. Most of the focus in trying to fix this problem are on the cars themselves or on the roads, hardly anything about driver skills. And we believe at Survive the Drive that there's an opportunity to improve driver skills through education and training. that driving is a skill, and we need skills improvement to improve habits and reduce crashes. And so that's what we're all about.
Okay. So right now, there are a limited number of opportunities for libraries and partnering organizations with libraries to bring Survive the Drive in to conduct these classes, these workshops, if you will. These are not hands-on. These are more presentations. Tell us a little bit about them, and there's a few that are already scheduled locally.
Yes. I think one of the great things about Connecticut, John, is that the library system is a community resource. And we've looked at it as we don't really need to be in schools per se. Let's go to libraries where we can have drivers of all ages and talk to them about safe driving and do the educational work. We have presentations lined up May 20th at Southington Public Library. We'll be in Wallingford May 23rd. There's one in Norwalk June 25th, another in Norwalk on August 20th, and at the end of August, August 29th, the New Milford Public Library.
Very good. We want to take a break for just a few moments, Larry, and we're going to come back and talk about taking that next step, going to the next level, getting behind the wheel of your own car with an expert to learn hands-on how you might be able to save your life and the life of others when you're operating out on the road. We'll be back to talk about the behind the wheel defensive driver training and a few more tips from charter board member Larry DeLute of Survive the Drive. Folks, also, if you're listening, survivethedrive.org is the website you can go to learn about the opportunity to possibly bring a Survive the Drive expert or experts into your local library. We're going to be back. Stick with us. It'll be some good, potentially life-saving advice. We'll be right back. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Unleashing your girl's potential should be a year-round affair. Girl Scouts is for girls, by girls. Everything a Girl Scout does, whether it's learning how to code, going on a nighttime hike, or building key entrepreneurial skills, girls ages 5 through 17 choose their own adventure and build skills to prepare themselves for a lifetime of leadership. Through the extended year membership option, new girl and adult members can register for a 17-month prorated membership. It's a pretty sweet deal. Why wait? Her adventure, fun, and success starts here. And if you're looking for an organization where you can make a difference as an adult and spend time with your girl, this summer you could become a Girl Scout volunteer. Introduce girls to new experiences and help them take the lead and change the world. Just learn more by visiting gsofct.org/join or call 800-922-2770. That website again is gsofct.org/join. We're back with Larry DeLute. He's a charter board member for Survive the Drive. They're located up in Litchfield County, but they, as you've heard in the earlier segment, work all over the state. They are also unique in that they present every year a behind-the-wheel defensive driver training course up at the Lime Rock Park in Lakeville, Connecticut. The next one is coming up on Friday, June 28th. There's morning sessions from 8 to noon and afternoon sessions from 1 to 5. And I believe, as in a few, at least a few years past, Larry, this year's program is being held in partnership with the Connecticut State Police, right?
Yes, it is. There'll be a demonstration of the crash vehicles that the state police have, and they'll be on hand for the event. It's always valuable to have the state police there to help us out.
Now, this is a unique thing because it's not only for younger people who are already licensed in driving, but you'll actually welcome a select number of young people that just have gotten their learner's permit.
Yes, absolutely. All you need is a learner's permit, and you can be in the program. And it's a great way to start out to help with crash avoidance, to make sure that people are paying attention and not distracted while driving, and learn something about skid recovery and braking issues, about anti-lock braking, and various aspects of a vehicle that, generally speaking, most drivers don't learn something until they're in an emergency situation. And what we like to do here is take people through what these devices are like, what these features, how they work, and that way they can understand them and have a lot better reaction when they do get into a real emergency situation.
Yeah, and this is especially unique because potentially they're going to be experiencing these hands-on exercises in either the family vehicle or their own vehicle, which they drive all the time.
Yes. And it's a safe, controlled situation so that there's no danger involved for them. But then, as I say, that it's something that your mind can relate to if you do wind up in a bad situation on the highway.
Excellent. So broadening the focus out, we should remind folks they can go to survivethedrive.org to learn more about this program. There is a per-person cost, and it is open to anyone 16 or older with learner's permits accepted. Larry, this is not exclusively for young or fledgling drivers, though. You do get a little bit of a mix of adults that want to refresh or reinforce their skills, don't you?
We've had people who are in their 70s, John, who have joined us for this event. What we find is that when new drivers show up, they usually, the parents come along, and we're very happy to have them be there. And they enjoy it, and not just enjoy it, but learn a lot while they're there, too. So we have people, adults, even on an age, as I say, into the 70s, who come for themselves, or they come to be there with their student driver.
Excellent. Well, in the last minute or so that we have with you, Larry, can you speak to all of the parents and guardians out there who have young drivers or drivers who will be learning how to drive this summer, and just convey on them briefly a couple of the most important points that they should impress upon any driver who is in the learning stages?
Well, I think the most important thing, John, is about distracted driving. That most of us have a tendency these days to use the features in a vehicle to allow us to do other things while we are driving. What we found is that this can be extremely dangerous. And young drivers, new drivers, are particularly susceptible to this because they're so used to being involved with their phones and doing multitasking. What's important behind the wheel is to understand that you're driving a large vehicle and that bad things can happen, but bad things won't happen if you pay full attention and make sure you have the proper skills to confront any situation.
Excellent. And don't forget, folks, you can learn those skills at the Survive the Drive Behind the Wheel Defensive Driver Training Clinic for individuals, parents, and teens. It's Friday, June 28th. Two sessions, one in the morning at 8, one in the afternoon at 1 at Lime Rock Park in Lakeville. For more information about this, or to welcome Survive the Drive, or possibly qualify for a free Survive the Drive workshop at your local library, just visit them on survivethedrive.org. We've been pleased to chat with charter board member of Survive the Drive, Larry DeLude. Larry, travel safe out there, and we'll see you up at Lime Rock in June. Thanks for being on the program. Well, we're back on the line with our friends from CIRC, the Connecticut Economic Resource Center. The steady stream of news that's been coming out of the state capitol in regards to taxes and fees and tolls and changes to federal tax laws may be taking its toll on state residents' views of their own and the state's financial prospects, according to the latest Inform CT Consumer Confidence Survey, as optimism continues to struggle to gain a foothold among state residents. Regular listeners to the program know that we have been following and reporting on these Inform CT Consumer Confidence Surveys since right around when CIRC started producing them, and we've been very lucky to be able to talk to a number of experts about these surveys up at CIRC. This morning, we've got Alyssa DeJong with us. She's Vice President of Research at the Connecticut Economic Resource Center. Alyssa, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
So, first of all, for folks who may not have heard previous segments or who may not have heard one going back, we've been talking to you folks about this for a year and a half or so. Give us the quick boilerplate on what CIRC is and a little bit about how the Inform CT Consumer Confidence Survey fits into the bigger picture of what CIRC does and how CIRC wants to present its resources to the general public.
Absolutely. So CIRC stands for the Connecticut Economic Resource Center, and we're a private nonprofit located in Rocky Hill. And we provide research services to towns and to companies so that we're with the overall goal of trying to help Connecticut's economy grow. We also help people who are looking to start or expand a company get the licensing and business registration information they need. And so as part of our public mission and our outreach, we took on the task of surveying residents across the state about what they feel are really important indicators and trends in Connecticut's economy and how comfortable they're feeling about the overall economy as well as their own state finances. And so we work with Inform CT is our sister organization that helps us get the word out about how people are feeling about the economy so that we can educate policymakers and other legislators and just key business leaders about what's happening and to add to the discussion.
And if I'm gathering correctly, these surveys are quite important for a number of reasons. First, they're done rather frequently, quarterly, right?
Correct. Yep. Every quarter we survey over 500 residents across the state.
And the big in the bigger picture, and sort of from 5,000 feet, the longer this program goes on, the more valuable the data becomes, not only to people like you that do the analyses, but also the value to lawmakers, government agencies, and the general public.
Exactly. And so now that we've been doing this every quarter since the beginning of 2015, we're able to see some trends. And it's interesting because you will see some seasonal trends. It seems that, you know, more people are more optimistic in the spring and summer and a little bit more downtrodden in the colder, darker months. But then you also see some changes, you know, not just seasonally, but then also just kind of overall with overall trends, kind of what's happening about how people are thinking about Connecticut and its economy.
Mm. From my perspective, the thing that this is to someone who doesn't, you know, drill into economics from a professional level, but more from a general interest level, whenever something like job figures or productivity numbers or national trends broken down at the state level seem to come out, whether it's been the former governor or the current one, you know, even small upticks or data points of good news tend to become the story. So often the good news, however small, is amplified and promoted and touted greatly, when, as opposed to downturns or negatives that may appear in that same data set. Is that a phenomenon that I'm mistaking, or is that actually happening from your point of view?
You know, I see it, and you know, because there's the data that comes out, and so we can see what's happening with demographics and with economic trends, but then there's people's reaction to it, right? There's a psychological aspect to kind of figuring out, well, what does this data mean? And so that's why it's really interesting to get the opinions of Connecticut residents, of people who aren't studying this data from an academic standpoint, but how are they feeling it, and how is it in reality, and does that match up with what we're seeing in the data?
Yeah, and also I was going to say also the political capital that comes from cherry picking positive data points and packaging all them at the top and leaving the one kind of outro paragraph to be, oh yeah, and by the way, the whole rest of the survey was in the tank.
Right. I know. It's really, it's so tricky because there's so much information out there, and especially during the legislative session. So we get so much information about different proposed bills and different laws that may or may not happen. And there's a lot of uncertainty about how these processes are ultimately going to end, because we're still kind of in the thick of the legislative session right now. And so you can see that kind of that uncertainty coming through in the overall results for this latest consumer confidence survey.
Okay. Also, did I just see that you the governor has set you folks up with a new boss over there?
So we have some new board members, as well as new co-chairs of our board.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have Jim Smith from Webster Bank and Indra Nooyi from the former chairman of PepsiCo are our new co-chairs, which has been phenomenal in terms of just a renewed energy and an interest in what we do, and just additional resources to help the state kind of think through business recruitment and expansion, and how can we help businesses and keep them here and help them to grow and expand in the state? Because that's really critical to getting the economy back on track.
Excellent. Folks, if you're just tuning in, Alyssa DeJong is with us. She's on Vice President of Research at the Connecticut Economic Resource Center. We're talking about quarter one Inform CT consumer confidence information with her. These numbers came out in late April, and we're pleased, as we have been so many times since they started these surveys back in 2015, to bring an expert onto the program to kind of turn what might be kind of complex data points into something we could all understand, since the data is actually being generated from us as citizens and residents of Connecticut. It's awesome to know how the data actually plays out and what it really means. And Alyssa, once again, we appreciate you kind of helping make this more clear to us. So the most recent information, even since this report has come out, that jobs and job performance data in Connecticut has showed up. It's kind of lackluster. So I guess the first question we should tackle is, why is Connecticut still lagging behind? Every time we hear regional and national news, whether it's the New England News Network or New York or national reports, everything seems to be sunny except this little cloud that continues to hang over Connecticut.
I know. It is unfortunate how this continues to happen to Connecticut. And we saw it here in the survey, where 55% of our residents said that there are some jobs but not enough in Connecticut. So you know, most of the respondents of this survey are saying that, and you continue to hear that, and the job numbers that you just talked about, you know, recently came out, and they just weren't that strong. And you know, why does this keep happening in Connecticut? Well, part of it is our overall industry mix in the state, and we have these, we have some very large industries and legacy industries. If you think about finance and insurance and advanced manufacturing, and they employ a lot of people here in the state, but they're going through some major transitions, and so we've seen kind of either some slight decreases or some kind of stability in those industries, where for the nation as a whole, you're seeing other industries really take off in terms of employment. And so some of it is just kind of the mix of industries we have here, and it just kind of holds back the chance to have some really, really fast and sustained employment growth.
Yeah. It must be frustrating for people when they're hearing reports on a national basis that the employment level is lower than it has been since back in the late 70s or mid 70s. Right. And yet they continue to get rejection notices, or they're making applications and they're not even hearing back, never mind getting hired.
Exactly. And it's really a struggle for some folks to finally get in the door and get either that first job or get some experience. And that can be difficult, depending on what industry you're in, to do that in Connecticut. And so that's why you see people moving to neighboring states to find those job opportunities.
Yeah. Well, the survey found that more state residents say they are worse off financially than 6 months ago versus better off.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit about that feeling and those facts.
Sure. I mean, what we've been seeing this trend kind of inch up more and more over the past couple of quarters. And what we're thinking is happening is that, and it's kind of difficult to think about, because you think about 2018 with so many companies talking about how many the profits they had and revenues were way up, but that wasn't necessarily corresponding with employment change or necessarily kind of any gain for the workers. And so I think you're seeing now more of a disconnect between the employers and the employees. You don't have as many people that go to work and have pensions like they did before. And so you don't have those, you don't necessarily have a big company kind of taking care of you like you did in decades past. And so I think that's really starting to kind of wear on residents overall. And so that's why I think there's more uncertainty about job prospects in the future.
And finances overall,
exactly.
In terms of an outlook, I mean, it's kind of shocking that from the end of 2018, those 3 months till the end of the first quarter of 2019, 10% more people expect that they will be financially worse off.
Mm-hmm.
So that sort of springtime blooming positive attitude doesn't seem to be connected to a person's idea of how much better that they'll be doing later in the year.
Exactly. I think there's also a lot of uncertainty about what the tax situation is going to look like in the state, because we're not really sure where things are going to land in terms of tolls and different services or goods that might be taxed. And I think that's wearing on people. And it's hard to think about kind of the tax code overall, because you hear about these proposed legislation coming out for very specific things, and so it's hard to make sense of it all right now. And so, are you going to be better off or worse off? It's hard to tell. And so I think people are thinking they're going to be worse off than they are right now.
Yeah, health insurance is still a big concern too.
Mm-hmm.
6 out of 10 Connecticut residents are still worried about being able to afford health insurance.
Exactly, right. And so that's that continues to be an issue with the cost of health care, and so that's definitely weighing on the minds of our residents.
Yeah. There was another disturbing first in the first quarter InformCT survey about when people were responding to the question or to the statement, Connecticut is a good place to live and raise a family. Tell us a little bit about that magical 30% threshold that has now been crossed.
Yeah, it has been crossed. So now we have more than, so So we have 35% of our respondents disagreed with the statement Connecticut is a good place to live and raise a family. And so that was the kind of the highest percentage that we've ever seen before. And that's something that, you know, we like to tout in the state, that even if a recent college graduate may leave the state for a job, they often come back in order to raise their family. And so it's disturbing. It's concerning to see those kind of statistics and have people questioning whether Connecticut is the place they want to stay.
Yeah. The other dynamic that is actually going to be very interesting to talk with you about the next time we get together is the difference between expectations of folks heading into the April 15 tax filing deadline and how it actually shook out for those people once they filed.
Exactly. It was one of the most complicated tax seasons for so many people. And so we did ask about tax expectations. And so we'll have more information in the next quarter. But we had 32% of our respondents expected a smaller refund this year relative to last year. 24% anticipated a larger one, but it was it was kind of interesting. It was still a little bit unclear as to, you know, how people overall were thinking about their taxes. The good thing, one of the good findings we saw is that about two-thirds of the respondents, though, did not expect their charitable giving to be impacted, and that was something that people were concerned about, especially nonprofits were concerned about charitable giving because of all the new federal tax legislation.
Yeah, and sadly, maybe it's people thinking they've got to keep those charities, especially close to home, as well-funded as possible because they themselves might be tapping those charities for some sort of support or services at some point
sooner than later. You never know. So it is always good to keep your options open, right?
Yep. So we talked a little bit about jobs, but there is an idea that the fact that there are plenty of jobs for anybody who wants to work is kind of a fallacy.
Right. Yes. So we ask folks about that. You know, are there plenty of jobs, or are jobs very hard to get, or are there some jobs but not enough? And so we had the majority of our respondents, about 55%, said that there are some jobs but not enough in Connecticut. And then it was virtually split. You had about 23% saying there are plenty of jobs for anyone who wants to work, and 22% thinking that jobs are very hard to get. So, you know, it seems like more people think that it's a little bit harder to get a job than to find a job.
Very good. Well, we appreciate you taking some time to reorient us on CERC and give us some background information on your new board members, as well as digging in a little bit more to the latest numbers. Obviously, we've got some barometers of comparison that will lead us into our next conversation with you or one of your designees over there at the Connecticut Economic Resource Center, Alyssa. So thank you for now for giving us some perspective. Alyssa DeJean is the Vice President of Research at the Connecticut Economic Resource Center, talking about the first quarter of 2019's Inform CT survey. We will be back around this time 3 months from now to look at quarter two and actually have an opportunity to look more at how income taxes and expectations around those actually shook out for folks here in Connecticut, and continue to look at a number of these trends. So, Alyssa, thank you for being part of the program.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.